I have been asked to give some of my experiences in the matter of an oral history. Since I am a retired Methodist minister and have been active in the church for over 50 years, I will deal with the early experiences of the ministry, giving some of the events of the old circuit riding days, some of the early experiences of my first preaching, and some of the various members of the congregation and so forth. I think perhaps I will start with the first sermon. This was before I was ordained, before I had had my formal education. However, I had been licensed to preach, which was a custom of the Methodist Church, or a practice of the Methodist Church, and went out to a church known as Fairview Church. It was a small sandyland community located between Floresville and Pleasanton. A friend of mine who was licensed to preach at the same time that I was to preach in the morning service, and I was to preach at the evening service. All went well. We had the morning service, then went out with some of the country folks for the Sunday, traditional Sunday dinner, and then we regathered at the church later that evening, and of course it was always after sundown. For the farm community, they had to milk the cows and see that everything was in order before they could go to church. It was a hot summer Sunday evening, and a high wind was blowing. The only means of lighting that we had was the old kerosene lamp, and one was placed on the piano so that the pianist could see the music, and the congregation knew the words well enough of the old hymns that they sang that they didn't need to read the book. Then the lamp was moved to the pulpit, where I managed to read the scripture lesson and take a text. I just about started my sermon when a puff of wind blew out the lamp. One of the members came up, struck a match, relit the lamp, and we proceeded to start again. After a few minutes, another puff of wind, and out it went again. After the third time, I told the man, I said, just leave it alone. I think I can preach better in the dark than I can in the light anyway. So we went ahead. We had a good service, and I, of course, being very nervous in that this was my first sermon, felt that it was perhaps an act of God that he did blow out the light so that I could feel at least a little ease. There are many things that happened in the early days of the ministry that are of interest to me and perhaps may be of some interest to others. So I'm going to relate a few of them. My formal education was in the matter of a student pastorate. In other words, I served a church as I was going to school. My first appointment was at Fowlerton and Los Angeles. These are located in LaSalle County. Fowlerton is a very small community, Los Angeles much smaller. And these two churches were to be my parish for at least for the year. The Methodist system was an appointive system, so I was appointed there as a student pastor. My total salary was $200 from the Fowlerton Church and $200 from the Los Angeles Church and $200 from the Board of Missions, or $600 for the whole year. This appointment was in 1924, in October. 1925 was a drought year all over the South Texas, and with no crops and nothing to really make anything for the farmers or the ranchmen, we lived just as we had to live, on whatever we could get. I remember going out and gathering mesquite beans to feed the milk cows so that we could give our baby the necessary milk. There was no such thing as refrigeration in those days, so we actually milked the cow whenever the baby had to have a bottle. That's the only way the milk could be fresh. And with a sack of bran and mesquite beans, we managed to keep the cow to where she would give enough milk for the baby and for our family use. This was a very interesting experience in the matter of my first pastoral charge. I was still studying. But that was back in the days of the Ku Klux Klan. It was raging. There was the anti-Klansmen and the Klansmen. And I was somewhat surprised when at my first visit to the Fowlerton Church to find that the congregation was divided right down the middle, and the Klansmen sat on one side of the church and the anti-Klansmen on the other. And they didn't cross the line. They stayed right in their places. And attendance was excellent, for they were always afraid that the other side would get ahead of them. So we had good attendance, and I tried to be the middle of the roader. I remember when I got off the train, Fowlerton, I was first approached by two of the officials. One was wanting to know if I was a Klansman or not. The other was wanting to know if I was going to support the anti-Klan movement. I remember my statement, and this is the statement I made. So far as I know, I think that it would be best that as pastor of the church that you not know whether I'm a Klansman or an anti-Klansman. And so far as I'm able, I'm not going to reveal to you any way, shape, form, or fashion throughout my ministry here whether I favor or disfavor the Klan. Well, neither one of them were satisfied because they both felt that they wanted to have a cohort in their pastor for their particular side. My first meeting with the officials, which we call the stewards of the church, was to emphasize the fact that there would be no meeting, no discussion of the Klan within the church, that the church was for all people, and that it could not be Klan or anti-Klan. It had to be the church. And the church was of God and was for all people, and all people were sons and daughters of God. Well, this was a very interesting year. Being appointed in October, quail season opened in November, and the fresh meat that we had during quail season, which was 6 weeks, was fresh quail every day. I've already stated there was no refrigeration back in those days. We could not keep fresh meat. About maybe once a month, a truck would go to Cotulla and buy several big blocks of ice, and then we would buy ice at a penny a pound, which meant that there was 25 cents for a 25-pound block of ice, and we really splurged in that we would have iced tea or something of that kind. But quail was a real manna, as the children of Israel found the manna and lived on manna and quail. We lived on quail and biscuits. We had to bake our own bread, and we had our biscuits and quail and some either just plain gravy, or once in a while it would be milk gravy. But for the full 6 weeks, we had quail every day, and that was our fresh meat. I've already stated that it was a drought year, and being a drought year, there was very, very little that you could count on a matter of support for the church. $200 was my salary from Fowlerton, $200 from Los Angeles. Well, Los Angeles was a more prosperous community, and they had a good deal of irrigation in that area. So they made some crops and was able to scrounge together and pay the $200 salary. A man had guaranteed my salary at Fowlerton if the conference would send a pastor. Well, the $200 didn't seem like much, but when we came to the end of the year, the church had only paid me $80. So the presiding elder insisted that this man make good on his promise and guarantee the salary. and pay my salary. Well, the balance was $120. And he came to me and said, well, now, Brother Sherman, we don't have that kind of money now. I wonder if you would mind taking my note so that you can report in full. Well, I thought a note was better than anything else, for in those days, when a pastor left the church and the salary was not paid, he had no claim whatever on the church. So I took the note, and I still have the note in my memoirs, unpaid, of course. So my first year's salary was $200 from Los Angeles, $200 from the Board of Missions, which they paid, and $80 from Fowlerton. It was an interesting experience, and I think that I gained more from the experiences of the church than I did otherwise. We had some great times. We had a great revival. I believe in that year that there were 13 conversions at the revival. And we enjoyed ourselves, but at the end of the year, I was moved elsewhere for educational purposes and moved to the San Antonio Circuit. Well, the San Antonio Circuit was a four-point circuit. Now the city of San Antonio embraces all of them, and there are large, thriving communities and throngs of people. But the four churches that I served, one was Fairview, the point of my first sermon. Another was Elmendorf, the little community south of San Antonio. And then the church that's called Salao, or now known as Coker Church. And another church, Lock Hill, off on the Fredericksburg Road. We went to these churches once a month, each having their particular Sunday that I was to be there. It was the custom in those days to go out on Saturday night, and very often we had Saturday night preaching. And then we would stay with some of the members overnight, and then for the Sunday services. At Fairview, we had some very interesting experiences, for it was customary in the summertime when the crops were laid by that the revivals were held. Fairview, we arranged to put up a tent for a revival meeting. It'd be cooler under the tent than it would be in a building. And we put the tent up on a gin yard, and because a friend of mine, the same one that I referred to earlier, having been licensed to preach at the same time that I was, he was in school at Asbury College, and he was going to help me in the revival meeting. So we decided that since we'd rented this tent, we had to stay close to it, because if it should blow down or get torn up, we were responsible. So we set up our cots in the gin office and went to various homes for all of our meals. Well, it was fried chicken time and watermelon time. We got up in the mornings and we'd go to some farm home for breakfast. And always, as again I emphasize, there was no refrigeration. The only fresh meat we had was fried the chickens that they'd kill that morning and fry. We'd have breakfast on chicken. Then we'd go back to the gin yard and we'd have a morning service, which is generally at 10 o'clock. And then after that morning service, we'd go to some other home for lunch. And it was fried chicken again. The afternoon was spent at visiting. But the evening meal at another farm and another fried chicken supper. We did this for 10 straight days. Fried chicken, breakfast, lunch, and supper. On the 11th day, we went to a place at noon and the lady apologized. She said, the skunks got into my setting hens. And I didn't get to raise any fire, so I just had to stew an old hen. Which was very interesting in that we had been eating fried chicken until we was really fed up, and and I have heard this so many times about the Methodist preacher and the fried chicken. I know why. They've talked about the Methodist preacher, the pioneer preacher, and fried chicken. We got fed up on fried chicken. But the watermelons, oh, they were good. Out on this cotton gin platform, we would have watermelons out. We'd keep them in the shade during the day, and every evening after services, we'd go out there, and by the light of a lantern, we'd eat a watermelon. And we wouldn't take the trouble of doing anything except just cutting it open, taking the heart out of it, because there were so many watermelons, we didn't need to bother about it. But some of the experiences of the circuit riding days, of course, it was not in the back in the horseback riding, but it was the old Model T car. The Model T Ford, and we managed to have one. Nearly every circuit rider had to have one. And the price of a car back in those days was $100, $125. Well, a new one was only $350, so you could manage to get a second-hand Model T. It was on one of these experiences in the old Model T days. As we were going out to preach one Sunday morning, I believe we were going to the little place south of Pleasanton at Whitsitt. When we were a little bit late and riding in the old sandy roads, and if you've ever driven a Model T in sandy roads, you know you've got to be very alert about the steering wheel or it'll snap around on you, and sure enough it did, and we turned the car over. Our oldest child was a baby and thrown out in that hot sand that Sunday morning, and of course we were very much worried about his condition, but fortunately he just had a slight concussion and overcame it readily. But from the old San Antonio circuit, I went on to Southwestern University, still serving as a student pastor and driving back and forth to school to Southwestern to gain my undergraduate work and do my undergraduate work in the form of education. Now I went on to Comfort and Burney, to hill country communities. And at this hill country community of Comfort, had some of the most interesting experiences of my life. I was pastor there for 6 years. When I went to this community, there were only 16 members in the church. The Comfort community is a German community, and most of the people there are from the old German revolutionists of 1846 and 47, the people came to this country to get out of the situation which was in the old country. Most of them, they came opposing the power of the church and the state in Germany. And so as they settled the town of Comfort, it was settled with a mutual agreement that they never would allow a priest, preacher, or lawyer to live in their community. Well, this had many, many interesting events around it because of the attempt and the old zeal of the early circuit riding preachers. They determined to carry the gospel wherever they could. Well, many were turned away at Comfort. Some were starved out, and I was told that some were even rotten egged out, and the boys of the community gathered up some old setting eggs that hadn't hatched, and they rotten-egged the preacher out of town. But I had an interesting experience, many interesting experiences there, for I came to appreciate and to love those people. Some of my dearest friends are still in Comfort. I organized a Boy Scout troop and worked among the youth. And after 6 years, you might say, not great accomplishments, but at least satisfactory, I left the church with 62 members. One out of the efforts and out of the just sheer determination of being a good person to a group of people that felt they did not need religion. From there, the appointment was San Saba, and this is where the depression starts. Or it was in October of 1929 that the depression hit. I was actually still in Comfort at that time, but went on to San Saba. I remember, and I've probably got ahead of my story a little bit, because as depression hit, there were people who thought they were wealthy, and then the next morning found that they had nothing. I remember a widow woman living right back of us who had stock in, she had invested all of her savings in stock in City Service Oil. And when the depression hit, there was nothing left, and she found she had absolutely nothing. But during those depression years, there were some very interesting things that happened so far as ministry was concerned. Back in the early days of the church, it wasn't always salary. Many times it was the commodities that people could produce: eggs, chicken, sausage, ham, garden produce. So those were the things that they paid the preacher salary with. Well, at San Saba, they were having a terrible time trying to pay the salary, and it was beginning to be accustomed to pay the preacher as much as possible in cash. But because of the difficulties that people faced, all preachers would say, well, we'll take anything that you've got that we can use and apply it to the salary. So we did, and I recall one time when a young man came to the house with a box of groceries, and not from the store, but canned goods from home canning. And this boy brought these in. Mama said she wanted to turn this in on the salary. Well, it was canned beef, and I think maybe some canned goat meat, and maybe some home canned corn and so forth. I don't remember. There was 10 or 15 cans of it. And I asked the boy, I said, well, how much does she want me to give you credit for on the salary? And he said, oh, she said about 10 cents a can. They were rusted and we didn't want to use them anyway. So the parsonage got the rusty cans that they didn't want to use anyway. And many times this was the case. It was the refuse. It was that which we can't use ourselves. Well, we'll turn it in on the preacher's salary. However, we had a great life. There were interesting things. Depressions was a hard time for everyone. And as we look back on it now, we thought it was a hard time. But it really wasn't. We managed to live. I never went hungry in my life. I remember one time when I gave my last dime to one of our children to go to the store to get a loaf of bread, and he lost the dime. So we had our times, our difficulties, but all good times. The ministry has been something interesting. Customs have changed, people have changed, ways of doing things have changed. I was able to go on to the seminary, or what was then Southern Methodist School of Theology, which later became Perkins Seminary, and had interesting experiences, of course, in all of these. But I think perhaps some of the things that I've enjoyed most was in the later years of life, as I served churches of greater numbers and perhaps more consequence than the early circuit days, and yet the circuit days were the days when you got close to people, you stayed in their homes, you lived with them. But I recall some things that have happened along the line of the broader expanse church. For instance, World War II. I was serving the church at Robstown, and I decided that since gas rationing was one of the problems of World War II, that I could show claim why I needed more gas, that I would serve what we call the larger parish. So I got Robstown to approve the matter of a larger parish. Went out to Riverside and a little pace out near, out north of Robstown. Went to Petronila Schoolhouse. Went over to Ida Dulce and Bon Ketty. Out of these and with these and with one assistant in matter of the larger parish, we were able to go at 9 o'clock and hold a service in each community, then back to another community for 11 o'clock. In this, we were able to organize some churches. One of them now is Grace Church, which is a very fine church that is located over near the Cal Allen area. Ida Dulce, Bon Ketty were ready to close their doors when we took them under our wing, and are now still good community churches. Later on, the experience of organizing churches became one of my, not hobbies, but one of my avocations in connection with the church. I enjoyed the matter of organizing churches. In Kingsville itself, Christ Church, I was able to give leadership to a group of laymen and arranged for a pastor to come to Christ Church, for I then was district superintendent of the Corpus Christi district. We organized Christ Church in Kingsville, and Christ Church has been a working congregation through these many years. A number of other churches that I was able to organize and to bring into existence. But I recall one thing connecting with the College of A&I, and I understand that this is to be in A&I College Library or something of this nature. I was preaching at First Methodist Church in Kingsville one Sunday morning, and after the service, a man came up to me, and he said, "I would like for you to come out and speak to my class at the college." I said, "Well, I'm honored, but what would you have me speak on at the class?" And he said, "Well, I am this speech instructor," but he said, "You didn't know it, but our PA system went out before you started preaching." And he said, "I was on the back pew," and he said, "I heard every word you spoke very distinctly." He said, "I want you to come and speak to my class as an illustration of voice projection. Your voice projects as well as any person I've ever heard speak." Well, I was honored, and of course, I accommodated him by going to his class. And though I don't think the class got anything out of it, it fed my ego, and I enjoyed it. Now, these are some of the things of reminiscing after 43 years of active pastorate. I'm now retired and enjoying myself out on Upper Lake Placid. Thank you for listening.